up? Welcome to Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650, your home of the Canucks. I'm Jamie Dodd, my co-host, Canucks insider Thomas Drantz, also covering the team for The Athletic. Canucks Talk brought to you by Avenue Machinery and Douglas Lake Equipment. Be a champion on the worksite. Find them together online at DLEAMC.com. We are live from the Kintec studio. Kintec, Canada's favorite orthotics provider, powered by thousands of five-star Google reviews. Sore feet, what are you waiting for? 650, 650, of course, is the Dunbar Lumber text line. I'm here at the Kintec studio, but Drantzer, of course, on the road as the Canucks get set to start their post-All-Star break portion of the schedule. Drantzer in Raleigh, North Carolina, covering the team right now. What's going on, man?
How am I coming through?
Good now. Get those levels up a little bit. There you go.
Fingers crossed. Loved your what's up today, by the way.
Oh, wow.
Thank you. It like that, man, it hits. Well done. good to be on the road. Canucks with a lengthy 70-minute practice today. I'll get into it a little bit more in the whiteboard. But unfortunately, the practice ran so long, I wasn't able to stick around for media availability.
Oh,
so,
devastating.
That's okay. Trying to keep a lot of plates in the air. But lots to discuss. It's been an interesting couple of days in North Carolina. Lots going on as the Canucks prepare to officially start the second half of what so far has been a dream season tomorrow against the Carolina Hurricanes.
Just before we get into the whiteboard here, I do have to say, speaking of media availabilities with Rick Tocchet, I listened to his yesterday after practice, and I really appreciated that you asked him about being a puzzle guy and then called Elias Lindholm a master key to get his reaction. And I couldn't see you in the video, but it sure sounded like you were fighting back a laugh as you asked question.
1,000%. And then I liked that he was like, well, let's not put too much pressure on the guy.
Slow down.
But yes.
Don't want to call him the master key right away. That was fantastic. Anyways.
Very good.
All right. So Canucks, two practices in a row. Let's get into it all with the whiteboard.
All right now, fellas. Hey, let's focus up, huh?
It is your daily deep dive into what's up with the Canucks. February 5th today, the headlines, Canucks beginning, as I said, their post-All-Star portion of the season with a five-game Eastern road swing will begin tomorrow afternoon in Carolina against the Hurricanes. Also want to point out, they come back after that for just two home games, then go back out on the road for three more. So eight of the next 10 games on the road here coming out of the All-Star break for the Canucks that have now loaded up by going and getting Elias Lindholm. And first up, two clashes against legitimate Stanley Cup contenders, teams near the top of the standings in the Eastern Conference, Carolina tomorrow, and on Thursday, the Boston Bruins. So first and foremost, the headline is, Drantzer, this team went out, tried to get a lot better. I think they did get better with the big deal at the Elias Lindholm deal. Now they get to go up against top teams right out of the gate, right away with the new look lineup.
Yes, and look, this Carolina Hurricanes team is a really interesting test for a team that tries to win games like the Canucks, right? Especially because, you know, the Canucks put together a really strong performance against Carolina when they met earlier in the year, but this Carolina team in particular excels. They are better than anyone else at one facet of the game, and that's controlling play. Now, that's the facet of the game that I tend to weight the most in analyzing team quality. It's why year after year I'm so high on this Hurricanes team. But for me, that's like the perfect test for the Canucks to throw Lindholm into for his debut, right? Materially, you know, this team's going to face different opponents on this road trip. The Boston Bruins are a different build than this Carolina Hurricanes team, right? The Detroit Red Wings attack off the rush. They're more like a St. Louis-style team, which we've seen actually give this Canucks team some issues. So that's an interesting matchup in its own right. Washington, I don't know. That's the weirdest team in hockey. You know, you sort of go down the list, but this Carolina team, they are just out there to win battles, gum up the works, shoot from the point, and like out-attempt you, beat you with raw volume. And, you know, this Canucks team has played better in that facet of the game over the course of the past month, but that's where you're hoping, I think, that Lindholm, a guy who can help you drive play, can help your top six drive play. Like, he, you know, this Carolina team in some ways excels in the area that you're hoping Lindholm can bring an extra gear to this club's, like, overall game. So we'll see how it looks in his debut. Certainly a tough opponent, a bit of a measuring stick game right off the hop, and, yep. And I'm certainly interested to see how it plays out tomorrow night.
Yeah, we can get into the actual matchup with Carolina a little bit more tomorrow on game night. But as you said, a great test right away for Lindholm out of the gates, but in particular because of the style of team, of course, that Carolina is. Then they get to play Boston on Thursday. And, you know, really, I also just kind of want to frame what's at stake here for the second – it's not actually the second half, right? It's less than that. But the second portion of the season coming out of the All-Star break, because, you know, obviously coming into the season, so much focus on will they make the playoffs, and they have given that a resounding yes, about as a resounding yes as you possibly could if you were the Canucks coming into the season. So what's at stake now? And really, it's things at the, you know, the very top of the list in terms of what a team can accomplish in an NHL regular season. It's win your division. Can you challenge to win the conference? And can you even challenge for the President's Trophy, right? And they've got a potentially meaningful game against Boston in that regard coming up on Thursday. But, you know, we're not just looking for, oh, is this is a measuring stick game. How do they stack up against other contenders? Like, these points do matter. As much as they punch their ticket to the playoffs, accumulating those points, and I think getting Lindholm in early to help you accumulate those points, that could really matter when we're talking, you know, in April about a matchup with the second wildcard team versus, say, a matchup with the Golden Knights in the first round. Like, that's a huge, huge thing to have at stake here for the final 33 games.
Yeah, and we'll add some excitement, although, you know, I think winning the West matters. Winning the President's Trophy doesn't, although it's nice, mm-hmm. right? Winning 50 games to me is, like, really a cool milestone for a team to hit, a mark of a really great season. Unless I'm mistaken, the Canucks have done it twice in their history. So to me, 50 games is, like, a really relevant milestone, something good to chase and aspire to over the course of an NHL season. But, you know, the stakes for me are win the West, win the Pacific.
Yeah.
With obviously the Pacific being the first order of business. You can't win the West without winning the Pacific, but the West being the really high leverage prize, because again, I think if you can bump into one of those Stryver class teams as opposed to the seven, you know, more robust playoff sides in round one, to me that's the sort of thing that you really need if you're going to have a miracle run.
That's the prize at stake here, and it's a big prize. And they're not the only team competing for it, right? Winnipeg, you know, the other teams in the Central, certainly Edmonton probably has designs if their 16 game win streak on tracking down the Canucks and some of the other teams. So it's going to be competitive. It's going to be tough to do, but they're right there. They have an opportunity, and the reward, if they are able to lock down those top spots in the division and in the conference, could be really, really important again come April. Broadsheet portion of the whiteboard, it's going to be a little drier, I think, for the next little bit in the broadsheet portion of the whiteboard, because, of course, the Canucks have already made their move, so the volume of reporting and, you know, rumor mongering out there isn't going to be quite as high as it was, Dranter.
I'm giving you a skeptical sigh. Yeah, look, I think this team is going to cool their jets a little bit.
Yep.
But, you know, when we talked about the cap space element of the Lindholm trade in terms of the flexibility freed up for next year, but I do think it's worth noting that the deal actually saved them immediate cap space right away, $650K mm-hmm. extra, which is, you know, I'm not going to use a word like substantive or significant or anything, but it's meaningful. It's meaningful flexibility at this time of year. You know, I think the Canucks defense corps is going to be under the microscope here. I think the Canucks' amount of size is still going to be something that this organization is going to watch for and evaluate. And I throw this in, like, all our listeners will remember, the Canucks went out the last time they were buyers at the deadline, first in the Pacific at the All-Star break, and bought Tyler Toffoli at the deadline.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, a week and a half later, Jacob Markstrom got injured. Now, a week and a half after that, the NHL shut down yes. for the rest of the season. But the point being that, you know, you think you need one thing, and then the hockey gods throw a curveball at you, right? The slings and arrows of a lengthy marathon hockey season will catch up to you. And this to me is sort of one of the interesting things is that $650K in cap space. I mean, with a little bit of retention, you could be in the Kevin Lankinen market if you had a goaltending injury, right? You could be in the Kaapo Kähkönen market if you had an injury. Like, there are players available, Band-Aid ads available now should something happen over the course of the next month. For me, though, the main thing to watch here is going to be the play of the defense corps. Does this organization believe in a, you know, I don't want to call it a win-now season, but certainly trending toward being a win-now season, especially given all of the various, you know, factors that are pushed in to help this team this season, whether it's Pettersson and Hronek's cap hits, whether it's, you know, JT Miller's age, the OEL buyout cost. I mean, there's a lot of things pushed into this season. All the assets already spent on this team, right? There's a lot of reasons for this club to prioritize the here and now, the short term. Ultimately, as March 8 approaches, do they feel they have enough on the back end, right? Or do they redouble their efforts to land a Chris Tanev, especially if the Flames can't get their asking price? Do they consider adding another body with some size up front, especially to help them at the net front on the power play? Those to me remain, you know, like maybe it's not on the front burner, Jamie. Maybe we've moved to the back burner, but I would not think that the Canucks will be out of the speculative, what is it? Like a sight, like a sniper scope. The speculative sniper scope over the course of the next month.
But I agree with you in that I think they will make another move of some sort. But inherently, they've made their big move, right? So the speculation is only going to be so fervent around which depth defender are they going to add compared to when it was, should they go after Gensel? Should they go after Lindholm? What are they prepared to give up, right? We've kind of answered that question. And I also think, to your point about, hey, they'll probably cool their heels a little bit here, you know, we're still a month away, a month plus out from the trade deadline. So take a couple weeks, maybe 3 weeks, see where you're at, see where you're at, see what shakes loose, then go and do that final kind of tinkering with the roster. That's kind of what I'm expecting. Now, they've surprised us before. They could easily do it again, but that's the kind of roadmap I'm looking at. It's a good point about the salary cap flexibility, though. And if you are sending somebody down, right? Because if you bring in somebody new and you're demoting, you know, a Linus Karlsson or a Mark Friedman, you know, that's a real player you can potentially bring in, especially, as you say, once you factor in retention, which gets cheaper the closer you get to the deadline because the retaining team is paying, less actual real money when they're retaining. So they're in an interesting position where they can do something beyond just, you know, a six-round pick for minimum salary depth defenseman. They can do a little bit more than that. I do think it's going to be interesting. I just also think they've made their big move, right? And so inherently, it's going to be less of a talking point than some other teams and what they might do and what the Canucks are doing on the ice. But hey, maybe I'll be wrong. Maybe we'll get this steady stream of really interesting Canucks rumors between now and March 8. I would love that because it's super fun to talk about. Lineup notes. This is a big section on the whiteboard today, man, because you were there at practice yesterday. They run out their first configuration with Elias Lindholm in the lineup since coming over post All-Star break, and looks really, really similar to what we've seen, kind of what we expected as well, with just Lindholm subbed into the Kuzmenko spot. So it's Miller and Besser on the top line with Pew Suter, Pettersson between Mikheyev and Lindholm. That's notable that Lindholm lines up on the wing instead of center at his first couple of practices. And then, of course, the bottom six as we've gotten used to it. Bluger between Joshua and Garland, Oman between Hoglander and Lafferty. On the back end, Hughes and Hronek, Cole Myers, Zadorov, Juulsen, Linus Karlsson, Mark Friedman, and a returning Phil DiGiuseppe, the extras at practice over the last couple of days. Did anything stand out to you? You've been at both of these practices. Anything stand out to you watching what the Canucks were getting up to the last couple of days in Raleigh?
Yeah, I mean, the Lindholm fit on the wing right off the hop with Pettersson. Him and Pettersson spent a lot of time conferring during the course of practice today, and then Pettersson had about a 10-minute conversation after practice, wholly positive, with Rick Tocchet at center ice. Like a really extended, unusually extended conversation with Tocchet telling the media afterwards, according to my resources that remained because I had to run off, that, you know, the focus was that line. Now, I asked Tocchet following practice yesterday, does the Lindholm addition to that line give you some additional flexibility to use that line in a matchup role? And he said, yeah.
Yes.
I mean, there was no sugarcoating it. Makes sense, right? Mikheyev is reliable mm-hmm. two-way. Can make the argument that Pettersson is this team's most impactful two-way forward. And then Lindholm obviously has been a Selke finalist. So, you know, I think there's a really interesting dynamic there where does this club try Pettersson against Tufts and sort of free up that Miller, Besser, Suter line to do damage a little lower down the lineup? How do we see Rick Tocchet deploy those lines here? We're not going to get a full view based off of the fact that they're opening on the road and Tocchet yep. won't have the luxury of last change, but that's going to be something to watch for here is to the extent that the Canucks coaching staff can control their matchups in open play, do we see a bit of a shift in calibration given that Miller has really been sicked on Tufts all season long to this point? That's sort of the top of the roster, like Lindholm line at even strength interest for me. You know, Zadorov remaining on the third pair on the other side of the All-Star break, I think also is interesting mm-hmm. given some of the noise that's flowed out around him. Can he work his way back up the lineup? Do we see a Cole Zadorov reunion? How does this club approach, you know, holding the fort in Carson Soucy's absence? And, you know, we've talked about this almost all year. The fact that in some ways, like, we know Soucy is good, but it feels like we don't really give him flowers until he's out of the lineup.
Yep.
Right? And then it's yep. like, oh, man, everyone misses Carson Soucy. They've gone through the same thing in Seattle all season. I think we've gone through it on two separate occasions in Vancouver. To me, it feels like Zadorov should be a big part of that solution. And the fact that he's, you know, remaining on the third pair, we'll see where his minutes go. That to me is a point of minor intrigue, at least. And then the power play. We saw the power play get some work today at the end of practice. A sign, by the way, that the Canucks probably will have an optional morning skate tomorrow, right?
Right.
It looked very much like the sort of morning skate paces that you'd get from a power play unit toward the end of practice today. So Lindholm at the net front, JT Miller at the bumper, Besser out to the left circle on his one-timer side. So this is sort of like a throwback look in some ways to what the Canucks did like at the start of the 2019-20 season with, you know, Besser and Pettersson on their one-timer sides with Hughes running the point. Obviously, Hughes with his shot now is a totally different threat up there.
Yep.
And then Miller and Lindholm kind of down low. Now, we know that Rick Tocchet wants movement. Today, was when they were going through their paces, I had to watch a few times before I could figure out exactly what each player's starting point was, because there was a lot of movement, and as that movement happened, there was very enthusiastic encouragement from Rick Tocchet. Like, yes! Yeah! Let's go! Like, he loved it. So, you know, JT Miller's going to take the puck behind the net sometimes
yep.
and replace Besser, and you're going to see Besser in the bumper. Like, you're still going to see Miller work, I think, out front. You know, the bumper is one spot where we've almost never seen it. Like, we've never seen him fixed there, really, since they arrived in Vancouver. We've seen him be a net front guy. We've certainly seen him be on his one-timer side mm-hmm. occasionally. I mean, he's lived on the downhill side of late for the last year and a half, really. So, you know, this bumper spot, I think partly because they had Horvat prior, and then because Miller was really orchestrating things from his downhill side on that left circle, we really haven't seen much of him in the bumper. I think this is, again, a sign of how much Rick Tocchet wants to prioritize downhill movement, have a more direct approach 5-on-4. So we'll see what that looks like. But yeah, Lindholm right in with PP1 and Miller at the bumper as Lindholm takes the net front spot. It'll be very interesting to see how that dynamic unfolds and what that power play looks like when they get out against a Carolina Hurricanes team that is a really significant shorthanded goal threat. PP2, by the way, because Kuzmenko's gone, Lafferty getting
yeah.
the assignment also in the bumper. Again, you know, that means on each unit, you've effectively got your biggest body playing in the high slot, right? To me, that's pretty interesting, just in terms of sort of a mirror image approach there. I would have asked Tocchet about it today if I'd been able to stay for the scrum. I'll ask him about it tomorrow. But, you know, point of emphasis, I think, is going to be taking the goalie's eyes. And I think partly the club thinks that they can do that with the higher guy as opposed to the net front guy. But yeah, traffic retrievals, I mean, that's clearly what you're looking for when you put Lafferty in that spot. Nils Höglander still can't sniff the power play despite leading this team in 5-on-5 goal scoring. At some point, I need to see it, man. Well, at some point, I need to see it.
I think the double deflection thing, too, right? How often have we heard Tocchet talk about that? You know, you have the layers of the deflection, so you have somebody in the bumper spot who can kind of be a screener and a tipper in addition to a shooting threat. I also think the power play one configuration, like, one, to your point, they're going to move around an awful lot. So we'll still see Miller in his familiar position. He'll still get a chance, you know, to orchestrate things with the puck on his stick. I think seeing it like that in, you know, the first go-round with Lindholm, more than anything else, you just an indication of how many options the coaching staff has, right? Not just on the power play, but also on the power play where you've talked about how effective Lindholm has been at the bumper, right? JT Miller, you know, on his downhill side or at the net front. As you've mentioned, Brock Besser has played all over the place at various points in his career on the power play. So you have a ton of flexibility. Those three players in particular, you can really move around. And as much as they're starting out in that configuration, you know, as you say, and as Rick Tocchet wants, I think we're going to see a lot of flexibility and a lot of movement between them. And really, that's another thing to focus on for this road trip for the remainder of the season. It's just that tinkering process, right? Gathering information. Okay, what works best? How do we use Lindholm best? What's our best configuration on the power play? What are some other looks we can go to as the season progresses? That's going to be something to really monitor here in these final 33 games. There's lots to get into about the lineup, about some of the players, Linus Karlsson called up, Phil DiGiuseppe back practicing with the team, how Tocchet plans to use guys in matchup roles, all of that. But we'll put a pin in that. We'll get back to it a little bit later in the show as we continue to wrap up the whiteboard here in the first segment of Canucks Talk, just to reset the playoff forecast, because obviously not a lot of change, no teams playing over the All-Star break, just to reset where things stand. Per Dom Eld's model at the Athletic, Canucks projected to win the Pacific with 112 points. Edmonton projected to finish with 108 points in second. So that gives the Canucks a 64% chance of winning the division. Edmonton in second with a 29% chance. And it really is a two-team race. You go all the way down to Vegas with just a 5% chance to win the division after that. Canucks 27% chance to finish in second. So 90%+ chance per this model to have home ice in the first round in the playoffs. And the 112-point projection that Dom Eld has for them, first place in the Western Conference, 1 point ahead of the Winnipeg Jets. So nothing guaranteed by any stretch, but the Canucks right in the running for all of these benchmarks we were talking about earlier in the show, Drance.
Yeah, and in terms of the gambling odds, only one major book has a line open on the game tomorrow, but the Canucks, according to that book, will open as plus 117 road underdogs, Carolina favored minus 141, according to one of the major sports books that currently has that open. Pacific Division odds, Canucks minus 155 consensus. You can find them valued anywhere from minus 149 to, or minus 145 to minus 160. And minus 155, that consensus is almost exactly in line in terms of implied probability. Like nearly exactly with Dom's model at about 60%. You can get the Oilers for plus 230 consensus, and that's, you know, also right in line. That's about a 30% odds. So Dom's value would say no value on the Oilers. Canucks are about fair value to hold on and win the Pacific here.
That is the whiteboard for today, February 5th. As mentioned, lots more to get into later on in the show, especially on the lineup portion, because really fascinating the options the Canucks have available now with Lindholm in the fold. We'll talk about some of that next with our guy, play-by-play voice of the Canucks, Brendan Batchelor, joins the show here on Canucks Talk, Sportsnet 650.